Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a September 18 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. With us tonight is Jim Miller, who is the owner of an electric motor repair shop here in Lexington, Kentucky. Jim, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, we had sort of an interesting acquaintance here a couple weeks ago, and I approached you about buying an alternator to do some experiments with, and you asked me why I wanted it, and I was debating whether I should go ahead and tell you or not, but over the last few years, I've found that it's a good idea to just go ahead and tell people what you're up to, and you never know, they might actually be able to help you or share things with you beyond what you would have expected. And that's what happened, because when I told you I wanted it for hydrogen experiments, you led me back to the rear of your shop and showed me a couple vehicles that actually had hydrogen boosters installed under the hood. So that was pretty encouraging. And then you surprised me this week by pulling a business card out of your wallet, and it was actually from Stanley Myers Water Fuel Cell Company in Grove City, Ohio. You've been carrying it around for some 15 years, is that right?
Yep.
So these are interesting things that no one who's interested in making hydrogen fuel from water, driving down Georgetown Street in Lexington, passing C&M Electric, is that name of your business?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the average person would not imagine that the owner of the shop has been interested in this technology for many years and is experimenting with it. So it's a good thing, and that's why this program exists, to try to help people realize that this is a field that is of great interest to many, many people in many countries, and it's time we all got together and shared information and tried to get this thing whipped. So how about if we start with your background? I understand that when you were a young man, you took a course in electronics?
No, basic electricity.
Very good. And from there, you joined the Navy?
Uh-huh, 10 years.
10 years in the Navy, in which you didn't get to use your training in electricity?
No, I was working out of engineering with steam propulsion. And when I got out of the Navy, I worked different jobs, construction, and got tired of it. And finally, I went back to college, and then I started my business. And I've been in this for, well, December will be 30 years.
Very good.
And I went up to see Stan Myers. They got me interested in it. And, of course, at that time, I was interested in installing them, you know, and he was supposed to come up with kits. So I was going to make the big investment, which never came about.
Okay, so you were prepared to invest in Myers' company?
Yes, I was.
With
yes,
a view to becoming a distributor of his products and being
right.
able to actually install them.
Right.
Now, you walked away from his place without having written a check, and why was that?
Well, because they couldn't give me any idea about when they were going to start producing them. And, you know, my money was sitting in the bank drawing interest.
Right.
But he wouldn't be drawing interest, and as it turned out, he never got around to that.
No, and so the people who did invest in his technology, although they helped promote it, they never have seen a return, as far as I know.
Never
no one's
did.
Ever.
But he's a very interesting guy. He's a very smart guy.
And we'd like to talk to you about that. Perhaps you could mention some of the things that you saw when you only made one trip up there to his place, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you went to the address shown on the business card, the Broadway address, which was a two-story?
No. It was held at a motel or a hotel.
So you actually went to a seminar?
Yeah, I went to a seminar.
Okay. Now, did you realize that such a seminar was held in Lexington?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. One of the local businessmen in Lexington, Buford Dispinet, made me aware a couple of years ago. It was similar circumstances. I went ahead and told him why I was interested in the stainless steel that he had in his restaurant supply. I told him it was for hydrogen experiments. And he said, oh, boy, I've got something to share with you. And he also pulled out a business card belonging to Stan Meyer. So here's two businessmen in Lexington pull out business cards from Stan Meyer that they acquired 15 years ago or more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty interesting.
Well,
anyway,
I never knew you had one here.
Yeah, he had actually used a hotel on the north side of Lexington to do a demonstration to businessmen here in town. So apparently, how did you find out about Stan Meyer even existing?
Andy Fraley from Fraley Auto Parts put me on to it.
And it could be that he was one of those who attended the local seminar, huh?
He might be. I don't know how he found out about it, but he was telling me about it. And, of course, being with a bad case of tinkeritis, I was interested.
So you actually made the three-hour trip?
Yeah, right, to Grove City.
That's just this side of Columbus, just south of Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm.
And Andy Fraley, he liked to blew his house down because he made one down in the basement.
Oh, he started experimenting with it.
Right, he started experimenting with it, and you've got to operate that stuff under a vacuum to be safe. You've got to use it as you make it. You can't
Not storing it under pressure.
Right, that's an atom bomb close thing to it.
Well, I think that Yul Brown in Australia, he's a Bulgarian who the name Brown's Gas comes from his experiments. He was storing the gas under pressure, but it was under very, very closely guarded conditions. It wasn't the kind of thing you would encourage a tinkerer to do.
Right.
Yul Brown used laboratory-type conditions to pressurize and store the gas. And he never had an accident, as far as I know. He never had a catastrophic explosion because of doing that.
Well, if you use spring-loaded check valves to keep the gas from traveling back up the line to the stored supply or source, then it's safe to do, you know. But that stuff burns mighty, mighty fast.
It's
like a speeding bullet is how fast it travels.
So if you're capable of making it on demand, why store it? That's the point, really.
Right, right.
Okay, so you drove up to Grove City. You went by yourself, I guess?
Yes.
And you got there, and how many people were there, and what were they doing?
I don't know. It must have been 50 people there whenever I got there.
So you were in a hotel conference room, is that it?
Right, right. And he had everything set up, and I don't know why, but he picked me out of the crowd to go get a bucket of water from the mop sink, big stainless steel sink in the back room, which was just regular water. And whenever he, fired up the hydrogen gas generator, it'll make you lose your thirst. I never seen so much gook and rust in water in my life that it separated.
Really?
Yeah.
Now,
what
was this a chamber similar to the one that's seen on some of the internet videos and whatnot? Was it did it have several tubes that were visible through the clear wall?
No, he was using a piece of PVC, a piece of plastic pipe, that's what it was, because you could see through it. You could see what was going on.
Okay.
And he used, I'd say it was 18 inches tall, and he used two flat pieces of copper in it, and he had knobs on the top where he could adjust them. And he used a Ford alternator with a rectifier out of it and used a 110-volt motor to turn it. And that's where he got his current supply from.
So when you say he had the rectifier out of it, you mean he was running AC?
Yes, he was bumping AC into it.
Huh.
Not DC, but AC.
Now, you're one who's very familiar with that because you rebuild alternators.
Right. Well, alternators is AC current. Uh-huh. And it's changed back to DC through your rectifiers, the diodes. But anyway, whenever he would put them, swing them with his knob real close together, the plates, it would go to generating a lot of gas, you know. And I think he let it go up to 2 or 3 pounds of pressure, and he used a ceramic nozzle on it, and he lit it off. I don't remember a check valve being there, but I do remember him using a ceramic nozzle on it because he said if he used a stainless steel or anything else, it would melt it. And
He had a live flame, like a torch flame, coming out of the top
sure
of the chamber.
Right, and he gave me the stainless steel pin about 3 or 4 inches long, and he said, put it up in front of it, just a little piece at a time, and I did. And just as soon as he hit it, boom, it melted right off. And I took it right on down until I couldn't hold it no more.
Huh.
I mean, it burned it off that fast. So that stuff is hot.
And you say that he was using copper plates in his cell?
Right. This was just for demo,
because copper really does produce a lot of junk when you have...
Right, it bleaches it out of it. It bleaches it out.
But he wasn't using any electrolyte in his solution anyway.
No, it was just tap water, because I went and got it. I know that's what it was.
And what was the spacing on those plates, approximately?
Whenever he swung them both together, as close as he could get them, they were probably a quarter of an inch apart.
Really?
Uh-huh.
So
but like I said, he was doing this just for a demo to show people what he would do. and had a great big wad of cotton at the top, and the gas had to travel up through that to get to the burner.
Nice.
You know. And he had a lot of other interesting things there.
In the hotel and, demonstration.
Right.
Now, did you also go to his shop afterward? Or
no, no, I never did make it to his shop. I'd probably still be there.
Okay, so what was some of the other interesting stuff that he demonstrated?
He was working on a home generating system to put it at your home. And you take wind-up coils, real small coils, oh, I'd say 2 inches in diameter. I don't know exactly how many turns he put on it, but they're about an inch and a half wide. And you slip it down a glass tube. And in that glass tube, use a real thin, thin oil and some kind of iron powder, real fine, crushed up, dusty type iron powder mixed in the oil. And then you use a laser to shoot down the center of that glass tube on one end. And, of course, it was squared. It wasn't round. It was squared. And then when it gets to the end, you use a mirror to make it go down the other angle, see? And that laser traveling, you know, or on that oil and that iron would make it start recirculating. Well, that iron core going around through those coils that he put on the outside of that tube created electricity. And his theory was that, depending on how much you want, as to how high you stack it. In other words, how many coils you want on there.
Have you ever heard of anyone trying to generate electricity using liquid with iron in it?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
Well, it'll work.
Interesting. And so he actually demonstrated that to this group of investors or potential investors.
Yeah. And he also had a bunch of magnets with rods flying through them and showed the power of magnetism, you know, shoot it over in a bundle of rags. I mean, it would fly. And that was using it on 12 volts.
So he really was diversifying his interests away from just hydrogen from water into other areas as well.
Oh, yes. He sure was.
But regarding the hydrogen fuel, you mentioned that you did see the dune buggy?
Yep.
So what, did they have it out in the parking lot right outside this room?
Well, they were close to a closed-down airport. And they took it for a ride down the airport.
And you actually saw the dune buggy running on water fuel then?
Yeah. And, of course, it burned a hole in the pistons because it was so hot. And the dog outrun the car. And
so the performance wasn't that good?
No.
So that's one thing he hadn't mastered, was the induction.
Right. Well, see, he was running. He wasn't running gas. He was running, you know, gasoline. He was running pure hydrogen.
Now, at this time, when you saw him, was he using the injector plug, or was he using that large ice chest sized electrolyzer to provide gas?
I don't know what he was using. All I saw was the back of the car. I didn't get that close to it.
Okay. So, toward the end of his career, he was trying to streamline the water fuel device to just being an injector spark plug that injects the water, simultaneously reforms it into fuel, and then explodes it all in one stroke, so to speak.
That's what I understand.
Sure. See, 15 years ago, are you quite sure about that time frame, that it was in 1993?
I'm guessing about 15 years ago.
Okay.
10 to 15 years ago,
yeah,
by
that
time
flies. He was holding up an injector spark plug and showing it off, because he died in 98.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I didn't really know when he died. Friends of mine down in Nicholsville told me about him dying, because I walked in on him and they were talking about hydrogen for gas, and the one guy said, oh, it's just smoke and mirrors. He said, that stuff won't work. I said, don't tell me it won't work. I said, I saw a Volkswagen run on it, and he turned and looked at me and said, Jim Miller, he said, long as I've known you, and you ain't told me nothing about hydrogen gas, I said, you never asked me. So that's when we got started talking, and everybody started making hydrogen gas generators. So far, I think I've made 14 of them.
Yeah, now the ones you've been making have been basic mason jar and coiled wire electrodes, right?
Well, yes, that's what Water for Gas on the Internet has, and that's the way I built them. And then I built one out of a 316 stainless tube. And I believe the area of displacement of the tubes makes it create about three times as much gas as the one with wire.
Oh, yeah, the surface area is...
The surface area makes it create more gas. And I think anybody who is interested in this and is making this stuff would be better off to use the stainless steel tubes on small cars, because underneath those hoods, it is so crowded, you can't hardly find a place to put one. And then trying to put six of them down there could be a problem. But if you make it with a stainless steel tube, I think you could get away with one of them, because I think it'll create enough gas for that. And still, running 4.5 to 5 amps, and that's not enough to kill your alternator.
Right. Now, that's something you know a lot about, and
mm-hmm.
You've been interested in other types of fuel-saving devices. For instance, you latched on to a book from Eagle Research having to do with high miles per gallon carburetors.
Yes, sir.
And in fact, when you went up to see Meyer's demonstration, you were driving a vehicle that had a carburetor with a... Was it modified?
Mm-mm.
Okay, this is stock.
No, it wasn't then. It wasn't modified then.
And yet you were getting, what, double the mileage that was normal?
Well, I was getting 28 miles to the gallon then, and that's running 82 miles an hour.
And that was in a 1965?
Ford Galaxy 500. 246 cylinder.
Okay. And so you learned from George Wiseman's Eagle Research book that it was possible to do a cold vapor conversion on that car's carburetor?
Yes, sir. And that also works. I know that for a fact. It's just that if you don't use the electric devices, then you've got to sit there and turn the knob and keep it controlled all the time, because every time you change speed, your vacuum changes. So then you've got to readjust. But if you pull the float bowl on about 1 inch of vacuum, then when your engine sucks the gas out of your carburetor, it sucks it out in the form of a vapor, like natural gas or something. And you can almost double your gas mileage that way.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, and anybody that's interested, you know, that's still got a carbureted engine, I would suggest they go on the Internet and look up Eagle Research and get the book for Enhancing Carburetors.
Yeah, okay. And we have had George Wiseman as a guest on this program.
And he makes and sells the parts that you need for that, the electrical device, which would make it automatic. He in the book, he tells about the tailor, his wife, says, you can do anything in my car if you want, as long as it's automatic, because I'm not going to put up sitting up there watching gauges and dialing in knobs.
Yeah,
so he had to make an automatic deal for her.
Right, and he said when he was doing these experiments, he was doing it on her car, and so he had to be able to restore it back to original condition whenever he was done. He
yeah.
couldn't leave it tore up for her, you know.
Right. She's the boss.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Now, what about a trick that you heard from an old fellow who said that if you simply made a slice, like a diagonal
oh, yeah.
slice,
take on the intake manifold, your intake manifold gasket between your carburetor and the base of your intake, if you will take a hacksaw and cut a small groove across it, but you do it at an angle so that whenever it sucks in air, it puts it into a twirl. And that'll also have this cold vapor effect on your gas, because it makes it stick around a little longer and makes it twirl and mixes it up better.
Okay, and so we're talking about more than one groove. We're talking about maybe three of them at least?
Yeah, about three of them.
And so
but,
you're
I mean,
creating
you've got to watch it that you don't make your groove too big, because you get such a vacuum leak, your engine won't run good.
Right, so you're not wanting a bunch of air to get in. But
no.
The little bit of air that you're wanting to pass through these little slices is at an angle to where it causes a spin
right.
of the intake
mm-hmm.
air.
Yep.
The fuel mixture, really.
Right. Mixes
then,
your fuel up a lot better.
you said this is similar to some inventions that came out where they actually had a little fan blade down in there.
Yeah, it does the same thing. It beats up the gas, breaks it up into a vapor.
Yeah, and creates that whirling. And which is sort of interesting, but I think Herman Anderson's spark plug patent shows that kind of, vortex-like induction of the fuel in his injector plug. It doesn't just go directly in. It comes in a vortex-type spin.
And, of course, for the new cars, I'm more interested in doing away with the fuel injectors and using an ultrasonic unit on it to break it up. And as I talked to your friend last night up there around Louisville, he's interested too. And then he wants to add hydrogen gas to it. So we might be looking at about 100 miles to the gallon on gasoline here if he can get it perfected.
Yeah, and that's a win-win situation. As I was discussing this with your son earlier today, the fact that you could save money and also be polluting less because you're throwing less fuel out the tailpipe, less pollution.
Right.
You got cleaner exhaust emissions and you're saving money.
Well, my 65 doesn't have a catalytic converter on it. Catalytic converter is to burn the 75% of the fuel that passes through your engine anyway. And when I hooked up the hydrogen gas to mine, it cleaned it up. I didn't even know it was running as far as the smog that it puts out in the back of my shop with the doors closed because it was raining outside.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, nothing come out of it but water. You couldn't even smell your exhaust because I got down on my hands and knees. You could not smell it.
Yeah, and see, it makes it all the more puzzling as to why this hasn't been used already for the many, many decades that it could have been used.
I'll tell you why. Greed.
Yeah, it's all about money, isn't it?
Right. It's all about the American buck.
Well, it's obvious that greed has taken us to some very ugly places, like the news, the financial news today and yesterday and the day before. So it has caught up with society in general.
And oh, yeah. Now people are thinking about it. And the reason that water for gas hit the Internet like it did was because too many people are dying, just playing with this stuff. And they figured if they put it out on the Internet and let it go worldwide, there'd be millions of eyeballs looking at it. And whoever's killing these people that's into this stuff, whether it's the government or the oil companies, they can't kill everybody. And that's why there's no patent on anything that's being made from here on. Is because they're giving it to the public on how to make it. Because
that really
they want
is something quite different, isn't it? It's not the way things have been. It's not the way business has been conducted previously, you know?
Right.
This represents a real change in the way for people to share something. And it's true that people are making money. Water for gas is making money and so on. But
the people that are doing it, that put it out on the Internet, are more concerned about the earth than they are about money.
That's
because
right.
They got it together, and the people that are the granddaddies of this have been using it for a while but wouldn't tell anybody. You know, they're scared to death to tell anybody. And then whenever they decided to break it loose, they all talked amongst themselves, and they said, well, let's put it on the Internet. That way everybody will be safe. And it will bring the government in, the car manufacturers, whether they want to or not, they'll be forced into it.
Exactly.
And right now, General Motors is experimenting hard and heavy on hydrogen gas for their cars. I've already heard about it.
Yeah.
And Honda, Toyota, and Subaru, I think Honda's in on it, has got cars that's supposed to be coming out in 2008, they're not here yet, that runs on hydrogen gas and regular gasoline.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. There's no reason why they should be bypassed by guys tinkering in their garages and even on their kitchen tables. People who live in an apartment, don't even have a garage, are building these things on their kitchen tables. Why would an automaker, how could they possibly face the world and say, we're denying this exists and we're not going to put it on our cars.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they are being shamed into it, really.
I think sometimes, and this will sum it up as far as I'm concerned, I think that sometimes the laws of physics were written for oil companies and the government. They're not always true. because I've been told by a lot of engineers, theoretically, it's impossible to run a car on hydrogen gas. But what they don't know is they don't go back into history. The first one that was ever fired off in 1805 ran on hydrogen gas, and this was long before Rockefeller started punching holes in the ground and producing gasoline.
You're absolutely right. And what I think is funny about that date is that the 200th anniversary came and went, and nobody wanted to even draw attention to it. When I opened the museum in downtown Lexington in 2005, that was our main theme. I said, hey, it's the 200th anniversary. And the newspaper wouldn't even run an article on it. They refused to acknowledge it until 2006. Finally, a reporter, under great pressure, agreed to do a story. And he said, well, there's conflict, apparently referring to conflict with science, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, the very week he said there's too much conflict with science, they ran a front page article on the Bermuda Triangle. So apparently they don't care about the conflict there, but when it comes to a conflict with the oil companies, as you said, that's when they don't want to publicize something, you know.
Well, you know, the way gas is used in this country, if we come out and we start, we get something perfected where every car on the highway can get 50 or 60 miles to the gallon, it's still not going to slow the consumption down. People will drive more, and more people are buying cars every day because these 16-year-old kids are getting their driver's license every day of the week. And it's still, they're still going to make money off of gasoline.
Yeah, that's true.
Besides, most of your underwear, your socks, your shirts, and your pants is made in polyester, which is a byproduct from crude oil. Everything you touch, your telephone you're holding in your hand right now is plastic.
Yeah, but
it's made from crude oil.
Apparently, they haven't wanted their income streams to be affected at all by these gas-saving devices.
Well, sure. They don't want anybody intruding on their profits.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it sure feels good to be involved in promoting a technology that's good for the planet and good for people's pocketbook. And as you said, the oil companies can take care of themselves. They make enough money already. So, one other thing, though. You had mentioned, in fact, that someone in the community just south of Lexington was actually given a purchase order or an opportunity to build, 30,000 of these boosters?
It was, put it this way, I don't want to stand for 30,000 because that sounds like a lot. It was either 3,000 or 30,000.
Yeah. So
but I know it was one or the other. It's down in Nicholsville, this guy, and how he's making them, I don't know, but I'm going to find out this weekend.
But it seems that a large order for electrolyzers has been given to a local machine shop or
right.
Manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's encouraging to know.
Well, yeah. I'll find out this weekend what he's making them out of. Because I might go down and give him some pointers. Because I've got one I know will outproduce the wire that people are using.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good. And that's where all this experimentation really
comes in.
Even if somebody's offering a product that consists of a mason jar and some wire, maybe it isn't the best thing, but it's an entry-level introduction for people to get involved in this, you know.
Right.
And that's why I haven't been defending this product as being great, but I have been saying don't be down on it too hard because that's how a lot of people have heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So then they can graduate to a more serious cell. Well, listen, Jim, we've come to the end of our half hour. It's been very nice talking to you, and hopefully we'll be able to do this again and share more information.
Okay.
If anyone wants to contact you, is there an email address they could send you an email? Or
right, cmautoelect@insightbb.com.
So it's cmautoelect, which is
E-L-E-C.
Oh,
E-L-E-C.
Okay, autoelect. At insightbb.com?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Well, then we'll post that on this page.
And that's
page.
Small letters.
Right. We'll go ahead and post that on this page so that people can get in touch with you. In fact, if somebody wants to buy an alternator, you sell one, a rebuilt alternator that has a single wire hookup, right?
Yes, one wire alternator.
Okay. And people who are interested in adding an alternator, maybe getting a higher amp output alternator, you could help them with that kind of thing.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay.
The Japanese models, little foreign cars, they've got them tucked down in there so deep that you can't modify them.
But this simple GM alternator.
Yes, that's the one you do it with.
Yeah, and I think you said you sell one of these things for like, what, $55, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it makes it pretty easy for someone to hook up an additional alter, or if they're doing some experimentation where they want to.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, listen, thanks again, and I thank everyone for joining us, and we'll look forward to doing this again in the near future.
Okay, buddy.
All right, take
care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.